This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, galactic space geek, Jeff Gagne.
Hello, Jennifer, and hello, listeners. This is the type of episode that everybody can get excited about because we are going somewhere we've never gone before. Today, we are going to prove that science has no age limit.
Oh, I love that. Yes, you can love science at any age. It doesn't matter how old you are. So what problem are we solving today?
How can you help with biodiversity?
How can you help with biodiversity? Oh, this is a great question. I am excited for this episode. Who are our guests today, Jeff?
We actually have two guests today, and they are going to be fabulous with this topic. We have Miss Casey Gaylord Opaleski, Programs Manager at Earth Echo International, and young Mr. David Yoon, who is on Earth Echo International's Youth Leadership Council.
Welcome to the show, Casey and David.
Yay, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Well, we are so thrilled to have you. And for those of you that didn't know the reference that Jeff gave you, last year, episode 47, we had Philippe Cousteau, who is an explorer, of course, and one of the founders of Earth Echo International. And he talked to us about this challenge last year. So guess what? We brought people back to see how it worked. How cool is this? So we are excited to have you both on here. But before we start all of that, just to remind our listeners, I kind of want to talk about what is biodiversity? And Casey, I'm going to ask you first to define it. And then David, we're going to have you tell us kind of what it's like to work with biodiversity.
Oh, I love this. All right. So definition of biodiversity: the variety of life in the world.
Yes.
Hey.
Yes. Different kinds of animals, plants, trees, everything you could think of. Now, David, what do you think?
Yeah, definitely. To me, biodiversity means something that connects us all. I think it's almost like the interconnectivity of life. That's really what biodiversity means, because it's really that balance of, you know, the tree, the bees, and the humans itself that makes it biodiversity.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. That was very well done.
Let's go backwards. David, I'll start with you. Why is understanding biodiversity important?
Well, I think that, you know, right at the beginning of it, we only have one Earth. We have to do a lot of things. There are a lot of issues that we need to be addressing. And if we don't understand what we're fighting for, how can we properly advocate for it? You know, that thought comes to me a lot. And in times of when I'm out there on the field or looking at different kinds of biodiversity, I always think back about in science class in seventh grade when my teacher first explained what biodiversity was.
Awesome.
Boom, right there and then was my passion ignited.
Excellent.
That's awesome. And I have to tell you that my seventh grade science teacher, who was actually a female, which was unusual back then, is also one of my inspirations. And I'm a considerable more ages older than you. And she's still, I can still remember her. Her name was Mrs. Susan Roth. But so teachers are just awesome to inspire us. Okay. So how about Casey, you want to tell us a little bit about Earth Echo International and kind of like what you guys do and how you focus on biodiversity? Why is it so important to your organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So just kind of starting at the beginning of things of who Earth Echo International is, in case you're listeners have not listened to episode.
Right, exactly.
Earth Echo is a nonprofit organization, and we envision a world where every individual from all backgrounds and experiences has the opportunity and tools to create a healthy and thriving environment. And to that end, our mission is to build a global youth movement to protect and restore our planet.
Because kids are powerful, right?
They are.
They can change the world. Exactly.
Absolutely. We see it every day here at Earth Echo.
And continuing with you, Ms. Casey, as programs manager for Earth Echo International, can you describe some of your programs before we get directly into the challenge we're going to talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So our organization was founded back in 2005 by siblings Philippe and Alexandra Cousteau. And they founded Earth Echo International in honor of their father, Philippe Cousteau Sr., son of the legendary explorer Jacques-Yves Cousteau. Yes. So we have exploration and adventure in our blood, as well as storytelling.
Absolutely.
Truly, really, we believe in a world where youth have the power to change the planet. So we try and hopefully advocate for youth and involve youth in everything that we do. So we collaborate with young people around the world to provide knowledge and develop tools that can drive meaningful environmental action to protect and restore the planet. And we reach more than 2 million people in 146 countries. And we try to support the next generation to become environmental leaders who will transform the future. And so our core programs are really designed as a path for action for young people like David to become leaders and change the world. So we focus our efforts in three different areas: fostering youth leadership, mobilizing communities, and educating students and training teachers.
Yeah. And all of those, are so great. Now, so we know kind of what the structure is. Now, David, tell us what it's like. Like, what have you learned? What's the most exciting thing? And I guess, why did you start and get interested in this?
It is so awesome to really be a part of Earth Echo International. And I first began in my community. I was, testing water quality at the local river.
Wow.
And my adult mentor came up to me and said, you should upload this to an international database where thousands of other youth just like you are uploading this water quality data. And I was like, oh my God, that is so cool. And we went to our water lab, we uploaded it. And after I did that, I saw that big name Earth Echo International right across the website. And I was just thinking, what does Earth Echo mean? And the more and more I researched it, I found that it was a community, a family of like-minded, passionate students, adults, and really people who care about the environment. And to me, I think it really has acted as that second environmental family. I learned so much valuable skills, whether it be leadership, how to approach senators on Capitol Hill, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And
as a kid, that's
exactly,
awesome.
Exactly. And at the very core of it, I think Earth Echo to me really means passion. You look at who we are, you look at some of the work we do, and it's not for any recognition. We're a nonprofit. We don't do it for, wealth, fame. We really do it just because we're passionate about it. And I think that's really what Earth Echo strives for. And the word, one word that I had to pick that symbolizes Earth Echo, definitely be passion.
That's awesome.
Fantastic. It sounds wonderful. I can hear the passion in your voice, which is wonderful. And you touched on the question I want to ask you, David. I want to go right back to you. The way you were describing, you were taking those water quality measurements. How did it feel for you when you found out that there was an enormous community of people that you could add your data to everyone else's data, kids just like you, grown-ups, or even kids younger than you, doing the same types of things? How did that change your perspective on the experiment that you were doing?
It was eye-opening and also so exciting. It's that potential to know that there are other people who are passionate about protecting our environment out there and about science. To give a little background information on my work in the transitional summer between 7th and 8th grade, I started volunteering with a nonprofit organization in my community called Love a Sea Turtle. And going to high school, in 9th grade, I founded my own umbrella organization, Plastic Free NC. And so working with different communities, working with different umbrella organizations, Earth Echo was the first international group that I had really worked with. And when I first joined this Our Echo Challenge, and when I first uploaded all this data to this international base and community, I was really, really so excited. And I remember in that moment, I clicked on the globe, I clicked on the map, I scrolled, and there were thousands, literal thousands of youth around the world uploading daily about what they found, these water qualities. And I was just thinking to myself in that moment, like, I'm not alone in this journey.
Right.
I'm not alone in my passions, and I'm not alone in my efforts.
Yeah, that's just fantastic.
Just a real quick follow-up before Jen asks the question. David, could you tell all of our listeners how old you are right now?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm 17 years old. I just turned 17. So I'm a senior right now in high school, but I started my work when I was in seventh, eighth grade. And I have to say, for all the listeners out there, never let your age define you. You know, you have the most creative mind in the world. And I really think that once you look past the age and start looking at the impact, that's truly where your journey begins.
Yes. And I would argue that that works for older people as well, right? Don't let your age define you, even if you're, you know, older. Like,
oh, without a doubt.
Like me. I mean, I write books for kids, but in my head, I'm still that 9-year-old, right? That who just was curious about everything. But I want to ask, I mean, let's talk a little bit more about some of the programs you did. First, tell me about the sea turtles. I love sea turtles. How did you get involved with that when you were in seventh grade? Because most people think, well, geez, you're not old enough. You know, you're old enough to like maybe pick up trash, right, on the beach. But you were involved with the Save a Sea Turtle program. How did that work?
Yeah. So Love a Sea Turtle is a
nonprofit
organization started, maybe 18, 19 years ago.
Wow.
Our founder had a vision. It was to save sea turtles by raising awareness and donating her funds that she collected, whether it be through bake sales, can collections, or any way that she could to donate to those sea turtles. But there were a lot of difficulties. And Miss Jennifer, you are definitely correct. And people were saying, like, you're not really making a dent. You're not contributing to anything. And she got tired of hearing this. And so she began to broaden her impact. And I remember in the newspaper, actually, I read about a group of youth who were providing summer camps to underserved youth in the community, the North Carolina community.
Wow.
Looking for camp counselors.
Right.
And the camps go from, you know, like 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. They're all about STEM. And living in North Carolina, these are very hot days. But oftentimes than not, I found that, you know, even though I was sweating, even though it was a little mentally and physically challenging, I walked away very happy because I knew that I was making an impact. And
wow.
I got started. My sister joined, I joined, and it actually became something that my entire family is very big into now. And it's amazing to me when I look back how I've dedicated almost 6-7 years of my life to Love a Sea Turtle. And I would have never really imagined that I would be sitting here in this podcast where my journey has taken me so far. But yeah, to put it very briefly, Love a Sea Turtle was just one of the first things that I really dived into environmentally.
Wow.
And we do so many great things. We have a community orchard and garden. We donated almost 15,000 pounds of produce during COVID to over 400 at-risk families. We just recently partnered with East Carolina University to develop a litter locator app, and we work on a sticker campaign.
That's cool.
I could talk for hours, but I don't want to fill this time.
Okay, all I want to know is, did you get to hold them and release them too? Because I saw one of those at Vero Beach when we were down there in September. We got to see them help the little ones who didn't make it out of the nest. Right, they go through and then they release them. It was the coolest thing ever. And they're tiny. They're loggerneck turtles. And they were like the size of, not even the size of your hand. And so you got to do that. I'm jealous.
Okay. I need to give David just a little bit of a break because his smile is about to crack his face. So Miss Casey, I would like to ask you, you being the programs manager, you get to work with all of these young people that are like David.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit of what that's like?
Absolutely. You know, the listeners aren't going to see my tears, but of course, hearing David talk, hearing any of the young people that we work with speak about their experiences and especially, you know, what Earth Echo means to them, it's truly moving and truly gives you hope for the future. You know, we've been living in some bleak times as of late. And so these students that we work with, you know, and they're as young as 13 years old and, you know, into their 20s that we work with.
That's fantastic.
And they are just absolutely inspiring. And David did, he mentioned something, and Jennifer, your face was like, what? He mentioned about going to Capitol Hill and talking to senators.
Yes.
And that is one of the things that we have done at Earth Echo. So within our Youth Leadership Council, which David is part of, we typically bring our young people together to Washington, D.C. at least once a year, especially post-pandemic now.
Yes. And
just this August, we were finally able to go back after the pandemic, get everyone together, and we did exactly that. We had a day on Capitol Hill, and our organization had arranged for meetings with senators and with their staffers. And let the students lead those meetings. So I had a group of six students. You know, we met with the senator from Florida, from Alaska, and some other offices as well. But we really sit back. They want to introduce us. And those staffers or those senators often look to the adults in the room. And I just kind of sit back and I'm, no, it's not me. It's their show. And it is truly in those moments where you see the power of young people. Yes. And you have mentioned it and David mentioned it, but age really has no limits. We should not be the adults telling the students what to do. Here at Earth Echo, we truly believe in the voice of young people. That's why we have a Youth Leadership Council. They are integrated in our day-to-day work. They work within our programs. They advise us on new programs that we're developing. And we even have spots on our board of directors. So
wow,
actually take activism within our organization and make those decisions for our organization on that level of the board. So we truly believe that youth have the power to change the planet. And it is just so incredibly inspiring, whether it's Mr. David that we're talking to, who's on our Youth Leadership Council, or, you know, a 10-year-old who's entered the RECO Challenge and shown us a really cool project that they want to put in their community. It's just amazing to hear these young voices and to hear the intelligence and the thoughtfulness behind their ideas and their actions.
Earth Echo is absolutely walking its talk.
Yes. Very good. Very well.
So we strive to do that.
So, okay. So what I want to ask David is, you know, so the main question, and I mean, we've already talked about this kind of around it, but how can you help with biodiversity? So if you're going to talk to kids your age or kids younger than you, and, you know, yes, you know, if they want to get involved in their community, maybe not through Earth Echo, maybe through Earth Echo, right? Where do they start? How do they start doing something to make a difference?
Well, the first step I always like to say is education. It is really important to research, you know, what you want to protect first. And so protect and fight for biodiversity, you must understand it. And I remember when I first started the RECO Challenge, I would spend hours on my computer or at the public library reading books and books of books about invasive, non-invasive species to North Carolina.
Right.
I researched, you know, living in Greenville, North Carolina, home of the Taunus River Basin. I looked at the history of our water quality of the Taunus River. It obviously is very different for everyone. You know, some people may not be next to a river, but I really do think education nowadays, you know, with such widespread internet usage, is such an accessible tool that not many people understand or are able to utilize. But I really do think that educating yourself would be the first step. And then the second step would be the action. So going out to those community events, going to write letters to your local newspaper or co-ops and just send, like, get that message out there that what you're trying to protect. And if you're brave enough, if you really want to, you can even, you know, go to your local news channel and say, hey, I'm planning an event or I'm hoping to speak at a city council meeting. If you want to show your support, you can pop out at this location, this time, and this date. And come out and do it. That's actually one of the many ways that I've been working to get these events or like these awareness programs out there. And so it works. A lot of people think that it's useless, but it works. It really does work.
I mean, you know, these days, like Casey was saying, we need some kind of happy stories, right? In the news.
Sure.
this would be a great one to cover.
And that's kind of where I was going. David, you were just describing how you have to do the education first, but then you have to take that action. Have you noticed in just your own experience that your youth has actually helped you with getting that message out there because the adults that you're talking to are more open to receive it?
Oh my gosh. I would not be where I am today without my youth team. just hands down, like, they have helped me through almost every journey, every obstacle. And I cannot tell you, or I cannot count how many times I was speaking at a city council meeting and having that team of youth right behind me, echoing with our turtle shirts, with our signs, and right in front of the adults' eyes saying, "We care about this. The next generation cares," has been so helpful. And to me, really, it's that community of knowing that you have unconditional support and forming that ties of unity and connections with other like-minded people.
Well, and talk to us a little bit about how it makes you feel. Because I know as an author, I've talked to a lot of kids about science and STEM, and a lot of them are like, yes, I believe in this, but I don't think that my one action makes any kind of difference. Can you talk a little bit about that, David?
Yeah, of course. I really like telling the story that my adult mentor at Lovis Utero told me. It's about a man walking on a beach. He sees seashells, or he sees these little crabs, and he picks them up and throws them back in the water. And he continues to do this. And people keep walking by. They're like, "What are you doing? Why are you even throwing these crabs back in the ocean? It's useless. It is pointless." But the man says, "I made a difference to that one crab. I changed the life of that one crab." And to me, really, I was like, I didn't get that at first, because it flew over my head. I was a kid. I was 12 years old. And he told me that story. I was like, "Oh, okay."
Nice story.
Big man.
But then there was this one day I taught a kid how to ride a bike.
He had
never learned how to ride a bike. His community members didn't know either. He didn't own a bike. And when I taught him how to ride a bike, and I showed him, I gave him a bike. And at the end of the week, when the week was over, he started crying. He hugged me and he said, "Aww. Mr. David, when I grow up, I want to do whatever you are doing." And that camp counselor,
that's fantastic.
You know, it's a volunteer thing, but to hear that a kid had been able to positively impact a kid's life really gave me so much joy. And I think it's unrivaled, that feeling. And I know it is unrivaled.
It is.
Knowing that you have impacted another individual's life positively, you can't beat it. And to me, in really, really short sentence, I know that was a long story, but to put
that's it very, a beautiful very simply, story.
Very simply, I serve, you know, not because I really, really like think that I'm the only one that can make a difference. I serve because I've seen what service can do for others. And it wouldn't sit right in my conscience if I woke up every day and ignored the needs of other people. Or in my opinion, you know, there are so many ways of serving. And if I can do my part, why not?
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay. It's getting a little moist in the eyes. Here in this episode, everybody. So I really hope you're enjoying
We're
this.
All inspired by you, David.
Yes, very much so. So I want to jump into this challenge that came up in episode 47, and it's part of why we're having this episode right now. So Miss Casey, can we start with you, and can you give us sort of the details and what this challenge with Earth Echo is like?
Absolutely. So we are very excited. We've just opened entries to the third year of the RECO Challenge. And the RECO Challenge is a STEM competition that empowers to take a closer look at biodiversity in their communities. So David had it exactly right of where do you start with this? Education, understanding it. So students first identify threats to their local ecosystems, and then they come up with an action plan and propose solutions to help preserve, protect, and repair those natural resources. So students in the United States and the United Kingdom are eligible to apply.
Wow.
And I can break down those age groups as well. But the competition is open for entries, and students can work in teams of 1 to 3. So they can work by themselves.
Wow.
Or they can work in a small team of up to 3 students, submit their plan to help protect biodiversity in their own community, take action in their backyards, and they can win grants of up to $5,000 to make that change.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. And I love that it's focused on local ecosystems.
Yes.
So kids don't have to worry about getting mom and dad to travel to wherever you want them to go. It's whatever is right outside their door.
Well, exactly. And it's their own. It's where they live every day. So they can, because, you know, I mean, I think you probably both agree, biodiversity doesn't change overnight, right? It takes time. So you can be there and watch this happen, which also probably gives you a sense of completeness, like I'm actually making a difference. Yeah. So David, can you talk to us about one of your challenges that you've done through our Echo?
Yeah, of course. My very first experience with our Echo was called the Floating Island Project.
Ooh,
and wow. You know, that takes me back to my water quality testing days.
Okay.
There was actually,
you know, way back in his youth. Come on.
There was one day when I was out on the river water quality testing, and the water quality was actually really, really bad. Like, surprisingly, we have no idea what happened, but we were like, oh my God, what happened? We didn't test for a month and the data is now skewed. We have an outlier.
Wow.
And this became more and more frequent. And what we found out was that there weren't enough filtration items or biodiversity within our lakes, ponds, and rivers that were filtering these pollutants.
Right.
And so my team and I were thinking, how can we address this in a innovative and, you know, promoting biodiversity way? And the solution we came up to was floating islands. And so when I say floating islands, people think islands up in the air. Or
yes. I mean, I got it right away.
We're with you.
In the water. But yes, explain it, please.
Yeah. So we went to our local high schools, and obviously these islands need to float. And we, this sounds a little gross, but we would wait till the lunch lines and we were like, hey, are you throwing that plastic water bottle away? And every single student with the plastic water bottle at the end of lunch, either we would recycle it or we would collect it.
Right.
And at the end of maybe 2 months, we had collected, was it 9,000 plastic water bottles? It was a lot.
Whoa.
It was shocking.
Whoa.
And that was just from our high school alone. And so
you can imagine
how many other plastic water bottles are being used in other high schools and colleges. But we were like, okay, now we have our floating devices. And the thing about floating islands is they're not anything new. We didn't reinvent the wheel, but we did try and put our own reusable and alternative innovative spin on it. And so our floating islands were completely made up of 100% reused items. They were old t-shirts, old PVC pipes that we took from old construction projects, used water bottles. And we presented this project to our Echo International, and we were very grateful to have moved on as a top 10 finalist. And I fell in love. I have to say that our Echo challenge, for any of our listeners out there, if you're looking for a chance to get out and show people what you're passionate about, or if you have an idea and don't know where to start, if you need funding, if you need that community of support, the Erica Challenge is the exact spot you're looking for.
That's fantastic. I have a follow-up. Okay, so explain to me how those islands help clean up the water.
Yeah, so if you think about soil and science back to the seventh grade classroom, you are taught how there are different layers of the earth that filter that pollutants, that rainwater.
Right.
It's earth's natural way of filtrating these bad toxins and pollutants.
Yes.
Aim to mimic that with these floating islands. And so if you were actually to open our floating island, if you were to take it apart, take a look inside, you would see that natural filtration device working, those different sediments, those different layers of soil filtering. And so as water comes in, it's filtrated through, it flows right out, and then the cycle repeats. And I have to say, they work. Just like, you know, seeing those local impacts being right there next to the river, testing it the next month, the water was drastically better. And I think in our Eco Challenge, actually, we tried to give a demonstration, but, you know, we were new to Zoom, and so we couldn't show it. But we had put a bunch of dirty water in a kiddie pool with our right. frozen islands, and we left it there for about 2-3 months. And lo and behold, it was like a really long time lapse. It slowly became clear. We tested the pH, the water quality, and wow. it got clear. So it was really nice to see what we were doing had actually paid off. So
using all reused materials.
Right.
Yes. And that's... so it didn't require any money, just time and dedication.
Well, and everybody's donation of water bottles, which was much better to have it end up there than in the landfill. Yes.
Thanks, right. classmates. So, Miss Casey, with any given challenge, how many entries are you getting? Ooh, how many teams are out there? And maybe if you can give us, you know, a little bit of what's the diversity of their biodiversity efforts.
Absolutely. And that's the question of the day, Jeff, is how many okay. teams are out there? Get your entries in. So we're super excited. We actually just opened for entries last week. So we're waiting very patiently for those entries to come in. And the entry period closes on March 3rd. 2023, which seems like a long time period, November to March, but we have these great breaks coming up within the school year. And that's a perfect right. time for teachers to kind of set up the students, to arm them with tools and resources to go out into their backyards and their communities, survey biodiversity, and start coming up with that plan of, you know, what should be there, what isn't there, and how can we fix this? How can we mitigate those threats to biodiversity? So we're hoping to see some entries come in over the holiday breaks that we have coming up throughout right. the school year. And just to kind of give you an example of previous projects that have been, David did a great job of explaining what their project was when they entered in the very first year. We also have a team up in Aurora, Illinois. They are restoring native habitats all wow. in their school ground community.
Wow.
They're removing invasive plant species and replacing those plant species with native pollinator-friendly plants. They mm-hmm. also have a little habitat or pollinator hotel. They go out in their community, they conduct oh. workshops at libraries, at elementary schools, and they show students and community members of how they can use, again, reusable, recycled materials and create a little pollinator hotel that they can then put in their yard or maybe in their school community grounds as well.
And how old are these kids? They're in
those
middle school, high school?
Seventh graders, yes. So should mention the R-Eco Challenge. One thing that I think is really cool about it is a lot of STEM competitions, especially those that have funding attached to them, they're usually for older students, for
yes.
high school
yes.
and college age students. The R-Eco Challenge kind of stands apart from all of those because we are awarding these grant prizes to students that are in between fifth and ninth grade.
Wow.
So, and okay. that's in the States. In the UK, it's years 6 through 10. So, you know, or equivalent age, which can fall in between ages 10 and 15. So we are seeing these young students come up with these amazing and incredible plans. We've got a single student team in Massachusetts. She has taken it upon herself to inventory biodiversity in her community, but specifically invertebrates. She is a wow. lover of insects. Her team name is Team Springtails. She has gone on to win awards through Audubon for her photography because it
wow.
is so incredible. So she's created brochures that she hands out to community members, and she's really trying to educate her community on what friendly gardening means to the little things that we usually don't take in account. You know, us people, we want beautiful green lawns. We kind of want to have that curb appeal in front of our house and
sure.
really... a lot of that is detrimental to biodiversity,
yes.
natural habitats. So she's working really hard to try and change what people in Massachusetts are doing and kind of what their lawns look like and what does healthy mean.
We need her down here in Florida. Because
yes, we do. Oh, I'm in Florida too.
Because we have to, you know, I am not a fan of keeping my lawn really green. I grew up in Illinois and there, and granted it was a long time ago, but there you just kind of let stuff grow. Here, yeah. Everything has to look pretty.
Absolutely. Right? So, we have another team, speaking of Florida, they're actually researching how to grow beneficial algae to outcompete harmful algae.
Oh, the red algae, which is a big problem. Yes. Oh, fabulous.
So they are looking a little bit. Red Tide was their inspiration, if folks have heard of that, but they have really big freshwater and saltwater environments on their campus in Central Florida. And so they are looking at algae growth, and they are actually, they just told us last week, David and I just found this out, they're traveling to Costa Rica because they've just partnered with a school there to replicate their entire experiment that they're doing.
Wow.
So it's just incredible to see what these students are coming up with in terms of their projects that they're passionate about and that they submit to attempt to get grants through the RECO Challenge.
Yes.
Wow. That really does sound cool.
I do want to give David a little bit more play if I can.
Sure.
Just to kind of tell his story and journey just a little bit more, in that he talked a little bit about how he started with Love a Sea Turtle and how he started entering his water quality data into EarthEcho's database that is international. So he found out about us there. Then he found out about the RECO Challenge. He entered with his floating islands. He became a top 10 finalist. They were not one of the top three winners, but they still continued their project. And then the best part of the story, I think, is that the following year for the RECO Challenge, I see another entry come through from our friends at Love a Sea Turtle. And I send a note to the mentor at Love a Sea Turtle. His name is Dan, who David mentioned. And I said, I'm so excited to see you all again. He said, can I call you? And so I picked up the phone and he said, I have to tell you, I had no idea this team was entering. And I submitted the entry for them because teams have to have an adult mentor submit the entry for them. He said, David Yoon, you might remember him from Plastic Free NC. He was their mentor and he walked these students through entering the RECO Challenge. And he got to the point of submitting the entry, and there's a button you have to toggle that says, I am 21 years or older. And he thought, uh-oh. So he called Dan. And then the following year, David applied to be a youth leadership council member here at EarthEcho. And here we are today. So
that's amazing.
I just love his story.
That really is amazing. Ms. Casey, thank you for sharing that. And that leads me right into what I wanted to ask David next. Is, as a member, David, of that Youth Leadership Council, one or two projects that you have seen come in from other youths that have inspired you, that have made you sort of make the face that Jennifer and I have been making this entire episode of, wow, really cool. And you can't use the one she just gave us as an example.
Pick different ones.
There is a member on my youth leadership council. I roomed with him at DC. And when we roomed together, we would wake up, we took a COVID test, and we did our morning debrief. We talked in the morning about how it was like back in his hometown, in his city. And I told him a little about my environmental journey. But he's working on raising awareness about salmon, but specifically orcas. And the thing with orcas is that, you know, contrary to popular belief, they don't just live in the Arctic.
Yes.
They live in more than one place. But he's noticing that these orca populations are rapidly declining because of man-made obstacles, whether it be dams, whether it be overbreeding of salmons being pushed out. And I talked to him, and the thing that inspired me from him was that he did not have an entire team at first. This was just a single idea that he had, but he managed to have such a meaningful and holistic impact because of his dedication and commitment to what it really means to him. Wow. I like to say that it's an inspiration, obviously not to discredit anyone out there, but really seeing him and talking with him and sitting down and listening about how many hours he would spend a day just researching orcas, trying to reach hundreds of thousands of news outlets
across
the nation about this issue. And when I asked him, how do you always have a smile on your face? How are you always getting through like your obstacles? How are you doing this? He looked at me and he said, David, I think the answer is really simple. It's because I'm passionate. I care about this.
Yes.
It is something that I love. And at that moment, I was just like, oh my God, you know, that feeling of doing what you really love and care about, not just in service, maybe it can be in your profession or career, makes the time fly tremendously easier.
It does.
What a wonderful example.
That's, and to think that you learned this at such a young age. The rest of us struggle with it until it finally hits us in the forehead when we're much older. Oh my gosh, this has been a fabulous conversation, but we do kind of have to come to the end. I'm guessing I already know what your challenge is, but Casey, can you kind of succinctly, and then we will put all of this information on our website, everybody, solveitforkids.com. But Casey, can you just very shortly tell us what your challenge is for everybody?
Absolutely. My challenge for everyone is to enter the Our Echo Challenge. So again, perfect. Student teams can go to www.ourechochallenge.org and find out more information, but check out biodiversity in your own communities, mm-hmm. learn about it, see what's threatening it, come up with an action mm-hmm. plan and a project to help mitigate those threats and see what we can do to help preserve our ocean planet together. And again, they can win grants of up to $5,000 if you're in the UK, of course, £5,000. So we really hope to see some innovative entries, and we cannot wait to see students' plans to change the world.
Wonderful.
Neither David, can we.
David, could you add a few words of encouragement to the students that are listening?
Of course. I have to say, don't be afraid to take that jump. One of the biggest things that I had to overcome was knowing that the biggest treasure or the reward that I want is in the cave that I most fear. I was really afraid of, you know, taking a part of this international community. I was like, oh my God, what if I don't win? But win or lose, I promise you, I can guarantee that you will walk away from this competition feeling empowered, encouraged, and motivated to continue your passions. Never let anyone tell you that you can't. I highly recommend it, both as a mentor, a participant, and now someone who works with the Our Echo and Earth Echo International community. Just be open, take charge, and good luck.
Oh, wow. Inspiring words. Wow. And on that note, because I don't think I can top that, thank you so much for being on Solve It For Kids, Casey and David. It has been
amazing. Thank you both so much.
Thank you
for having us.
What a great episode. So much information and so much passion for using science to solve some of the world's biggest problems, which turns out when you start thinking about it and you get around other excited, passionate, smart people, those problems don't seem quite as big to solve because you can just start attacking them.
Yes, I agree. I think David is just so inspiring.
Absolutely.
And he's done so much at such a young age. So, you know, I'm sure he has way more to offer. And Casey is also, the fact that she kind of leads these young people towards biodiversity and kind of just guides them slightly, that shows great leadership skills on her part. And Earth Echo International is, I think, fantastic because it introduces kids to science and encourages them to expand their own curiosity and solve problems, which we all know is what we love to do on this show, right, Jeff?
Absolutely. And just like David said earlier on in the episode, he was starting this when he was much younger than he is now.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
With Casey's passionate leadership and so many passionate students out there like David who are already coming up with solutions to problems that they see out in the world, not ones they're being told about by grown-ups, they just see them out there in the world, and they use their own creativity and teamwork to come up with solutions. Earth Echo International's challenge, which is all of your challenges, listeners, for this episode, gives a full-blown contest, which kids love to participate in, a full-blown contest
absolutely.
For students to either work individually or in teams, I love that option, to come up with a local solution to a local problem. Isn't that a great challenge for this episode?
It's a fabulous challenge for this episode. So be sure to go and check out Our Echo Challenge. which will be on our website, solveforkids.com, for the episode page. But you can also check it out at their website, which is earthecho.org. The challenge is going on right now, and so you can actually sign up with a team or by yourself. I would have loved to have done this when I was a kid, because I probably did a lot of this. I just didn't have any kind of structure involved.
Yes.
But if you do end up submitting for the challenge, we would love to hear from you. So please tag us on our social media. We are at KidSolve at Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And also, one thing we don't mention all the time, when you go to our website, solveforkids.com, we actually have book recommendations. So if kids want to learn more about what we discussed, or if you want to look into environmentalism or something like that, we have suggested books for kids to learn more. So be sure to check that out as well, too.
If you are going to be working on the R-Echo Challenge, you have until March 3rd, 2023 to get an entry in. Until next time, you'll hear Jen and Jeff on
Solve It for Kids.